he's been interactive with his church the entire time. And it's because his church is based on himself, it can't be destroyed. Various parts in various places can get pretty weak, but the body of Christ cannot be destroyed. Okay, very briefly in classical, rational apologetics, it's stronger. And I've talked about the creation, the arguments for the creation. The universe can't create itself. It's not an illusion. It can't and cannot have existed forever because it's wearing out. So its only possibility is that it was created by an eternal being. And for that, it has to have intelligence, it has to have intentionality, it has to have more power than the universe itself. So he has infinite power, infinite knowledge, and he built it all. That's the only way the universe can exist. It cannot come into existence by accident. And this is something to keep. Every worldview ascribes creative power to something. No matter who it is, Hinduism, Islam, there is creative power being ascribed to something. And atheism is sort of nothing exploded, and here we are. So it's not an illusion. It's not self-created. It's not self-existent. So it's only possibility, and that's why the impossibility of the contrary. We've eliminated all, we've looked at all possibilities and eliminated all but one. That means that's the only one.
He is necessary being?
Necessary being in philosophy, that means absolute, has to be there. Something that is necessary must be. It cannot not be. And then Thomas Aquinas had a little simpler version. And so in the end, the reality and rationality requires an eternal, intelligent being. Okay, then, new step. At the very bottom of page 2, it says, it is never about winning, Greg. It is about exposing the inconsistency. God does everything else. Never forget the antithesis. And it is, every worldview is riddled with inconsistencies. It cannot have a coherent view of reality that's not like Swiss cheese full of holes. And it's our job to point them out. And part of it, we get better as time goes on. But the inconsistencies are built in. Now, when atheists, and we'll see this again with Richard Dawkins, as he's pointing out the inconsistency, what he calls inconsistency, but they are disagreements with his
own
religion. I use that all the time. Whoever talks, your religion, yes, it's different than mine. And you're forced by your religion to believe those things, which is exactly what they accuse. Oh, you only believe that because the Bible says you have to. And no, it's true. It happens. The truth happens to. And I added this one here. We do not want to trim the unbeliever's tree. We want to dig it up by the roots. And this is the root. This is where we're going. The root of the tree is right here. At the presupposition, that's the faith level. Just like, well, how do you know there's nothing outside the natural universe? That sounds like faith to me. So presuppositions are most basic or fundamental beliefs, believed by faith, held religiously, unverifiable by natural science. They're outside the entire realm of... And by the way, this whole picture sums up those three apologetic methods. This is the evidential circle. This is, if there's no evidence, then this may not be a valid starting point. There should, if you have a proper starting point, there should be evidence to confirm that. And evidence is for confirmation, not for pointing the way. Because it's weak. And then metaphysics, epistemology, and ethics, that's the rational part of the apologetic. And so as you progress, you get better at bringing in whatever's needed. This person needs a little bit of evidence. Okay, let's talk about dinosaurs and the fact that there's unfossilized material inside dinosaur bones. That cannot be possibly 65 million years old. That's a big deal out there. And in debates and all the things that I've ever watched in these discussions, I rarely see anybody going here. There's a on YouTube, you can. It's called Nuclear Apologetics by Jason Lisle, L-I-S-L-E, and he goes in through goes into some of this and later on about the don't answer answer strategy, how to do that. You know, I totally disagree with what you're saying, but let's say for the sake of argument that it's true. Okay, Richard. I don't believe anything you're saying, but let's just say there's no God. Okay? Well, how do you know there's no God? Then you start asking questions to bring out the inconsistencies and things. So, because we already know that every non-Christian belief system is inconsistent, it leads to chaos, leads to suffering. So we point that out. On the cultural scale, as a culture becomes more consistent with its own presuppositions, it either stabilizes, if it's founded on truth, because truth is that rock. Truth is what sets people free. But if it's not, it disintegrates if it's founded on something else. And right now, do we see order increasing or chaos increasing?
Chaos.
Order versus chaos. Control versus liberty. These interplay. And it's like a teeter-totter. As one increases, the other decreases. You can't have an increase in order and an increase in chaos at the same time. On a cultural level. So, okay, our big picture thing here is epistemology. What is that? Remember? What we know. Epistemology is about what we know. Ontology is about what is real. So we're talking about meaning and how ontology deals with the meaning of things. So, and morality is the easiest example. Everybody knows that morality exists, but most people cannot explain why morality exists. Where did it come from?
And ontology is what again?
Knowledge. How do we know what we know? Everybody knows about morality at some form. And in fact, this would be talking about. It's immoral to teach your kids that God created the world. They use a morality argument. And so immediately, wait a second. What do you mean morality? By what standard? That's a good question. What standard are you using to say this is moral and this is not? Now, you said there's no God. All that exists is matter, chemistry, and physics. So how do you get morality out of that? Isn't that just your opinion? Isn't that just your subjective reality? And you want to impose that on everybody? And you begin to break down. But it takes they're going to claim knowledge. There is no God. But how do you know? God doesn't exist. Life has no meaning. Well, how do you know? We'll look at those of you. No more. So, facets of presuppositional thinking, and that's on your page here in the middle. And I've reordered them a little bit. So the image of God is one of the facets. And the best that Musk can offer is, isn't evolution marvelous? It gave us the capacity for all of these things. That doesn't work. You can't pile up enough chemicals to get reason or logic or beauty or justice, and we'll get to those in a minute, the transcendentals. Genesis 1:26-27, God created man in his own image. Male and female created he them. Genesis 9:6, God institutes capital punishment because man is created in the image of God.
I don't know what page we're on.
3. Kind of, right, top half. But they're not in the same order. So the preconditions of it. And this is what I'm saying. You are the ultimate proof for the existence of God. Remember that we're not starting with, we're not trying to prove God. We're starting with God. Because without Him, we haven't got anything to start with. Nobody starts anywhere. He is our ultimate precondition. And we're made in His image.
That's, I go to a Christian book club and they called it Imago Dei.
Yes. It's kind of cool when you throw in a Latin phrase. French phrase.
Well, Imago is just image and Dei is God, but we just add of.
Yes. Well, the way the language is an image of God. And so, preconditions of intelligibility. What do you have to know in advance for something to be meaningful? To be able to comprehend? I've got some examples here. Asks, what things must be true in order for our reasoning and experience to be meaningful? In the end, God alone provides meaning. If there's no God, all there is rocks and dirt and stuff. How do you get meaning? Well, it's up to you to find the meaning for your own life. That makes it entirely subjective. There's no objective meaning to reality. So people become very self-centered. If it's up to me to discover my own meaning and happiness, then I become very self-centered. So the proof is that without Him, you can't prove anything. There's no idea that you can't trace back to its very foundation that you don't end up with God. But if you deny that God exists, you have no proof. You have no foundation for anything that's out there. 2 + 2 = 4. Without God, there's no way to put that down to its foundation. Internal critique shows the irrationality and incoherence of a system by using its own standards. And we'll hear that from Dawkins. He's using his own standard to put down the Bible. If there's no God, then of course the Bible would be wrong. But we're going after their standard. Atheism, which is horrible as an intellectual pursuit. It uses its own standard to expose internal inconsistencies or incoherence or failures to meet preconditions of human experience. What things that we experience every day. But Christian Science says all disease is mental. It only exists in the mind. Nobody's really sick, they just think they are. Well, that's not the reality of human experience. They are sick, and they will die without help. The existence of transcendentals, going to spend some time here. Absolute, immaterial, invariant, universal objects. I call them AIUs. Transcendentals exist outside of space, time, matter, and energy. They are supernatural because they don't exist in nature. And then impossibility of the contrary. We eliminate 3 of the 4 possibilities. By the impossibility of the contrary, the 4th one has to be true. That's also kind of comes in Occam's razor. Looking at everything, usually the simplest explanation is the one that's true. And then finally, the answer strategy we'll look at here. That's on the last page. Preconditions for intelligibility, the necessary mental resources for meaning and comprehension. We look at 2 + 2 = 4. How do we know that? Because we have some preconditions built into us. We know about 2s, we know what plus means, we know what equals means, and we get a conclusion. Equals MC squared is a little more difficult. You have to know some stuff, even about algebra. It assumes a knowledge. Grass is green, pretty easy. You have to know what grass is. You have to know what green is. Elephants are heavy. And then I added another little one. I see a ladybug on a rose. How many things do you have to know about for that to make sense? You have to know what a rose is. What's a ladybug? What does it mean for one thing to be on another thing? Or is it in another thing? There's just things about knowledge, it's all epistemology, that you have to know for something to make sense. What does it mean to see? This is where we're getting down here Because this, at this kind of level is where the inconsistencies really begin to show up. And also it begins to show up when you hear a preacher or newscaster or just anybody talking about, they're making claims about things that are true, they start allowing for some verification. And it provides an avenue for us to verify stuff. There's so much junk out there, inside and outside the church. So, here's some. Does that look familiar? That's John 3:16 in Spanish, in Thai, in Thailand, and Yoruba, Nigeria. It's all John 3:16. But if you don't know that, if you don't know that language, then you're missing the preconditions for this to be meaningful. Looks cool, but tenga vida eterna, have life eternal. Okay, do ready. Take a look at these. And I don't know if I have these. So Richard Dawkins, we're going to hear from him in a minute. Biology is the study of complicated things that give the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. And Francis Crick, one of the co-discoverers of the DNA strand. Biologists must constantly keep in mind that what they see was not designed, but rather evolved. Now, they have some knowledge here. It looks designed, but I can't go by what I see. We walk by faith, not by sight. That applies to these guys, too. It's not what I see, but it's what I have as presuppositions. With that, let's hear from Richard.
Obviously, I couldn't take down the wall myself, but I could confront one of its modern architects. Hello, Professor Dawkins. How are you? I'm Ben Stein. I'm sorry to keep you waiting. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
You have written that God is a psychotic delinquent invented by mad, deluded people.
No, I didn't say quite that. I said something rather better than that.
Oh, well, please tell me what you said. Please tell me.
I would have to read it from the book.
No, please.
The God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction. Jealous and proud of it. A petty, unjust, unforgiving control freak. A vindictive, bloodthirsty ethnic cleanser. A misogynistic, homophobic, racist, infanticidal, genocidal, filicidal, pestilential, megalomaniacal, sadomasochistic, capriciously malevolent bully.
So that's what you think of God?
Yeah.
How about if people believe in a God of infinite lovingness and kindness and forgiveness and generosity, sort of like the modern day God? Why spoil it for them? Why not just let them have their fun and enjoy it?
I mean, I don't want to spoil anything for anybody. I write it up and read it if they want to. I believe that it is a liberating thing to free yourself from primitive superstition.
So religion is a primitive superstition.
Oh, I think it is, yes.
So you believe it's liberating to tell people that there is no God?
I think a lot of people, when they give up God, feel a great sense of release and freedom.
Why do you think that? I mean, what's your scientist, what's your data?
I've had a lot of letters saying that. And
there are 8 billion people in the world.
That's quite true.
Professor Dawkins seemed so convinced that God doesn't exist that I wondered if he would be willing to put a number on it.
Well, it's hard to put a figure on it, but I put it as something like, 99% against or something.
Why do you know it's 99% against, say, in 97?
No, I didn't. You asked me to put a figure on it, and I'm not comfortable putting a figure on it. I think it's, I just think it's very unlikely.
What? But you couldn't put a number on it?
No, of course not.
So it would be 49%.
Well, I think it's unlikely, but it's quite far from 50%.
How do you know?
I don't know. I mean, I put an argument in the book.
Well, then who did create the heavens and the earth?
Why do you use the word who? You see, you immediately beg the question by using the word who.
Well, then how did it get created?
Well, by a very slow process.
Well, how did it start?
Nobody knows how it started. We know the kind of event that it must have been. We know the sort of event that must have happened for the origin of life.
What was that?
It was the origin of the first self-replicating molecule.
Right, how did that happen?
I told you we don't know.
So you have no idea how it started?
No, has anybody.
Nor has anyone else. What do you think is the possibility that that intelligent design might turn out to be the answer to some issues in genetics or in evolution?
It could come about in the following way. It could be that at some earlier time, somewhere in the universe, a civilization evolved by probably some kind of Darwinian means to a very, very high level of technology and designed a form of life that they seeded onto perhaps this planet. Now, that is a possibility and an intriguing possibility, and I suppose it's possible that you might find evidence for that if you look at the B cells of biochemistry and molecular biology. You might find a signature of some sort of designer.
Wait a second. Richard Dawkins thought intelligent design might be a legitimate pursuit?
And that designer could well be a higher intelligence from elsewhere in the universe. Well, but that higher intelligence would itself have had to have come about by some explicable or ultimately explicable process. It couldn't have just jumped into existence spontaneously. That's the point.
So Professor Dawkins was not against intelligent design, just certain types of designers, such as God.
So the Hebrew God, the God of the Old Testament, he doesn't exist in your view?
Certainly. I mean, that would be a very unpleasant prospect.
And Holy Trinity of the New Testament?
Nothing like that.
Do you believe in any of the Hindu gods?
How can you ask such a question?
You don't, right?
How could I? Why would I, given that I don't believe in any others?
You don't believe in the Muslim God?
No. Why do you even need to ask?
Well, I just wanted to be sure. So you don't believe in any God anywhere?
Any God anywhere would be completely incompatible with anything that I've said in
I just wanted to make sure. You don't believe in any God anywhere?
No.
What if after you died, you ran into God? What have you been doing, Richard? I mean, what have you been doing? Having time to be nice to you? Yeah. I gave you a multi-million-dollar paycheck over and over again with your book, and look what you did.
Bertrand Russell had that point put to him. He said something like, "Sir, why did you take such pains to hide yourself?"
But if the intelligent design people are right, God isn't him.
So, you went round and round.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're full of holes.
But he admits everything looks designed. Same with Francis Crick. Francis Crick is one of the originators of the aliens did it. Because he recognized how absolutely unlikely life is to have come about just by chemical accidents on the Earth. So they recognize, and this is going to be testimony against them. Out of their own mouth, they acknowledge appearance.
He was really feeling like he was on the hot seat.
Oh, he was, Ben.
It's kind of putting it to him, but he's not used to that.
No, when you reach that quote-unquote height of expertise in that department,
got letters and books and contracts, the ego, and
he's not used to being challenged. I mean, he was one nervous man.
But his own words is going to be the ones that'll bite. Why did you take such pains to hide yourself when he says looks designed?
It looks like it was,
but we got to go somewhere else. So every worldview has to answer these questions. Origin, where did we come from? Destiny, where are we going? Meaning, why are we here? And morality, how do we live? All of them. And they have to be answered in such a way that each one is individually intelligent, but then all together, they're coherent. They all work together. They flow together. They're an integrated whole. Because you can't have origin, destiny, and morality without having something that's over, all of them. Where did this come from? So every worldview answers. Marxism, Islam, Hinduism, they all answer this. And this is another way to break up, to get the inconsistencies between them. So if our origin is nothing, how do we get meaning and morality out of anything? The Marxist destiny is that evolution will carry humanity at some future point to the perfect communist man who never takes more than he needs and is always willing to share what he has. That's the ultimate communist dream. But right now, people act like animals that need to be controlled by the master ranchers of the state. That's socialism. Because they don't know how to manage their lives, they don't have resources, so we have... And as this becomes more global, there will be people deciding who gets what resources around the world. You want to take a break?